Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Hey folks, it's time once again for the Pro Wrestling Roundtable, and as always, it's me, John Morganeil, your host, and Richard Ewell, our producer, champion, and as always, Jonathan Williams from WrestlingWithPopCulture.com, and tonight we're going to talk about WrestleMania memories, and we're also going to talk to the excellent comic book writer, publisher of the Headlocked comic book, Mr. Michael Kingston, and we also want to announce that we now have a Patreon account for the Pro Wrestling Roundtable, where you can support our podcast and you know, give us a little bit of help. And that is at www.patreon.com/the Pro Wrestling Roundtable. So we'll tell you more about it next time. But for now, just go take a look at that if you want to. And in the meantime, sit back and to get a listen.
The Avengers Assemble podcast from White Rocket Entertainment. Creator and fan interviews and discussion about Marvel's Avengers comics, movies, and everything else. From Van Allen Plexico and the Jarvis Heads of AvengersAssemble.net, creators of the best-selling Assembled books and the most fanatical Avengers fans on the face of the earth.
Hey, cats, kittens, it is time for the Pro Wrestling Roundtable interview section once again, provided by, as always, our wonderful Jonathan Williams and the great website, WrestlingWithPopCulture.com. And tonight, we are talking to, for the second time, actually, on our show, been too long since we talked to him, Michael Kingston, the creator of the comic book Headlocked. And he's got some new stuff coming up and some stuff he wants to talk to us about and we would like to ask him about. So welcome to the show, Michael.
Hey, how you guys doing, man? Thanks for having me on.
Good to have you again.
So if you can tell us a little bit about yourself, Mike, and, you know, the obviously Headlocked and all that wrestling goodness that you got going on.
Sure. You know, I was a wrestling fan and a comic book fan since I was like 8 years old. I loved them both. And I bought every wrestling comic that would come out, you know, and they were never, to me, they were never very good. They were always kind of silly or campy or, you know, it kind of just felt like somebody was trying to cash in on wrestling when wrestling was hot. Like, they weren't done by fans. It was just somebody was like, oh, WWE's big. Let's make a comic book and sell them to those dumb wrestling fans. And, you know, it became apparent that nobody was going to make the wrestling comic book that I wanted to read. So I decided to make it myself. And, you know, I created this book called Headlocked, which is the story of a kid who's a theater major in college who falls unexpectedly falls in love with wrestling, and he quits school, and it's his journey through the wrestling business sort of on day zero, you know, right on through. And it's got kind of an HBO AMC-style drama feel to it. It's not a superhero book. It's not a fantasy book. It's, you know, as far as people think of when they think of comics, it's just like a straight drama. You know, we've been really fortunate to have a lot of wrestlers contribute to the book. You know, Jerry the King Lawler is our cover artist, and, you know, all the art in the book is done by wrestlers. Our interior artist is Mikel Molapola, who's a Samoan wrestler from New Zealand, former tag champ with Haku. So it's really cool, and I'm really proud of what it's turning into.
Yeah, on Kickstarter right now is the fourth installment, and so you have three previous installments, and each each installment has different wrestlers in it, right? Like that's rights for it and stuff.
Correct. Yes. Each book has five chapters of Headlocked, and then we do since Headlocked has is told from the one character's point of view, you know, we use the stories by the wrestlers to sort of create build different corners of the universe that, you know, we can eventually take Mike Hartman and steer him through. So, you know, the Kickstarter is the only way to get the content with the wrestling with the wrestlers. So that's the Kickstarters are like the lifeblood of our franchise. So that's how we get the books made. So we give the people who back the Kickstarters the best content.
Cool. I'm looking at this picture on the Kickstarter, and it's a great picture with like the first picture is like a fan sitting down, then you've got him carrying like the ropes, then in starter gear, and all the way up like the evolution of like a fan to wrestler. It's a really cool picture.
Yeah, that's been pirated a number of times. A number of people have tried to co-opt that image, but that's kind of like our signature image. You know, that's essentially what the book is about. It helps having a wrestler be an artist because he understands so much of what you're trying to get across, and it's so much of an easier collaboration. And, you know, our very, very first book, I had a Filipino artist who's a great artist. He's done some work for Dynamite Comics too, but he didn't know wrestling as well. So, you know, it's a much more complicated deal to try to explain wrestling. But, you know, now that Mikel is an actual wrestler, it's a breeze.
What kind of research did you do? Because obviously wrestling, everybody's gotten a little peek behind the curtain. But you go into some of them, you know, the more still more insider kind of experiences of training and all that. Did you ever actually train to wrestle, or how did you go about researching that kind of stuff?
You know, when I decided to write the book, I kind of figured I should have a feel for it a little bit. And it's kind of funny now to tell the story, but you know, some indie guys in Virginia had reached out to me, and I live in New York, and they were like, "Hey, why don't you come down and let us if you're going to write something like this, you should have a feel for it." And I agreed. So they're like, "Hey, come down and we'll work you out in the ring." And I mean, I did it, and it was fine, and they were great, great. And super nice to me, but like I could have gone so much worse, you know. And it's just I'm just gonna go to some stranger's ring in five states away and take bumps, and what could possibly go wrong? And I mean, when you're
running to Bob Roop in the 70s,
right, exactly. That story had a much happier ending than it could have. And I mean, I think about it now and I'm like, man, what a dope. But, it worked out all okay.
So I guess one of the perks of the books is all the wrestlers that you have that write and draw. What was it like? How did you go about getting these people? I mean, I'm sure now it might be easier because I know the name is out there. But, I mean, when you were starting out, what was the process like of getting the wrestlers involved?
Everything has been so much easier than you would ever expect for me. When I first started, I didn't have anybody attached, and I was selling my books at artist alleys, at comic cons, and I met guys. The guys who like comics were at comic con just as fans, walking around, and they bought my books. I met Shane Helms that way. I met Rob Van Dam that way. I met Christopher Daniels that way, and they all really liked what I was doing, and they all said, they were all like, "Hey, if there's ever anything I can do for you, excuse me, please let me know." So it became, I always kept that in the back of my mind, and and then I hooked up with Jerry. I sent Jerry a cold email through his website, and I forgot I did it after I did it. It was such a ridiculous long shot, and he messaged me back and he said, "This is my address. Send me some of your comics and I'll take a look at them." So I sent them to him, and then he called me up. And I mean, if he didn't have such a distinctive voice, I would have thought that somebody was playing a prank on me. But it was him. And a lot of people don't know this, but Jerry got into wrestling through art. you know, yep. he had drawn pictures of the wrestlers on television in Memphis mm-hmm. and then mailed them to the station, and they put them on the air. And so he told me, he goes, you know, when I saw your email, you know, I remembered what that felt like as a kid to see my artwork on television, and that, you know, Lance Russell took a chance on me to put my stuff on television. So I wanted to pay that forward when I saw your email. So,
it's very cool.
Wow, that is awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's sometimes it's interesting because people just know people through their wrestling personas and whatever. But I mean, you know, I've known Jerry for years now, and he's one of my better friends, and just an incredibly generous guy, and he's a really cool dude. And I mean, he totally changed my life. I mean, in as much as that people have helped me, I mean, he was sort of the tipping point for me that really opened a lot of doors.
Yeah, I mean, just having that kind of pedigree involved, you know, it really legitimizes the book.
No, absolutely, and I think with guys that want to contribute, they're like, oh, you know, if Jerry's vouching for him, you know, that gives you a different level of, you know, cachet with guys when they're approaching you, and I'm not just some, you know, some wacko with a wrestling comic. I mean, I am such a wacko, just a wacko with a comic. You know what I'm saying? They don't know that.
But you're not just a wacko with
a comic. Right, exactly.
So are you just a writer, or do you do any of the art yourself, or is it just a writing process for you?
I'm the writer, creator. I pretty much do everything but the art. I have art skills, but I mean, you know, I think the trick is knowing what you're good at and what you're not. I mean, I'm not professional grade. I'm, you know, probably better than some people, but
better
again,
me.
Not. And at some point, you know what I mean? Like, I can't, it takes us long enough to get these books out, you know, with me just doing what I'm doing. So right. it definitely helps having, being able to delegate some of it to, you know, teammates and such.
Yeah, comic books is a very collaborative medium, and there are some people who are able to do it all on their own, but it's not a normal thing. So for you to be able to do as much as you do, I mean, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it's a labor of love. I mean, I'm mm-hmm. you know, I work like 60, 65 hours a week, and I'm on the road on the weekends trying to, you know, build an audience, because, you know, in as much as we have all these names attached, we're still not, you know, a WWE sponsored thing. We're not a, you know, we're not a superhero comic. So, you know, I mean, we're independent in every conceivable fashion. So we don't necessarily come across as independent because of the names we have attached, but we are as independent as it gets. So,
hey, you never know. WWE seems to be in the market to buy these days.
Yeah,
I feel like this is something they would never touch, though, because I mean, they want to present wrestling as sort of like this Disneyland thing, and I mean, you know, some of the negative aspects of the business are what drives our story forward. So,
well, you know, you're probably right. You certainly are right, but keep in mind things could change. Because I was just listening to Bruce Pritchard talking about the whole thing with the Wrestler and all of a sudden the other one. The Wrestler first came out, apparently Vince hated it.
Yeah.
Because the way they painted the business and the way that it was and so on and so forth. But once it became a huge hit, then he changed his tune and then he wanted it to be part of WrestleMania. And that's why it ended up, you know, the whole thing happened with Jericho and the old timers and so on and so forth. So you never know with old Vince, but, you know, but yeah.
Right, but that's a crazy thing too, because I mean, Darren Aronofsky had an Oscar, I believe, at the time, and he still had to make that movie on his own. I mean, even yeah. with the cachet that he had in Hollywood, like, he still had to basically make that movie out of love. So, yeah. You know, it's, I mean, realistically, honestly, I feel like there's only a small handful of people who could push this through, you know, through Hollywood. You know, obviously The Rock or John Cena or somebody like that who's a, you know, got a real name that would attach it to it. But, you know, we still keep plugging away. I feel like if we just keep getting bigger, eventually, you know, the brand awareness will, you know, take care of itself. So,
well, that's true, but I wouldn't hurt to send a copy to Rock's office. Because, I mean, that's sacred. I mean, he picked up and is doing this Page movie just because he just happened to run across that documentary they did on the Knight family, you know, a few years ago. and decided.
I hope one day to meet him. He's one of the few guys in the business mm-hmm. that I haven't met. You know, it's the sort of pitch that I probably like to make in person. It's definitely something that, I mean, it's in the back of my mind if I ever have the chance to be in the same room with him.
Whatever happens to me. But the comic is great, and that, as long as you keep doing that, and like you said, it's a labor of love. But I mean, it would make a great. I think it would be a better television series than it would be necessarily a movie.
It's an ongoing story.
Yeah, it's an ongoing story, and it would be great to follow this character through a long term storytelling like that. And, you know, and it would be perfect for something like HBO or Netflix or something like that. That'd be great.
My dream to do it would be to be a late night cartoon. All the late night cartoons are all comedies, but nobody's really doing like a late night cartoon drama.
True.
But, you know, then I could get the wrestlers to do voices, to add a little star power to it, and then, you know, they get a voice acting credit, which maybe gets them, you know, an avenue to not have to fall down all the time, and you know, everybody wins from it. You know, that's how I've tried to do business since the time that I started. And you know, I feel like they say when you shoot wrestling for television, you have to take like every bump that you have to take like 100 times. And I kind of feel a little bit guilty now, knowing the toll that it takes on them. You know, to having a guy taking 100 bumps. to film something, so
yeah,
but we'll see where it goes. You know, I'd like to. I mean, I would like to see it someday and expand into other mediums. Absolutely.
I'm just sitting here looking at the, like I said earlier, the Kickstarter. But I love the headlocked promo with it's a Reservoir Dog tribute. I'm guessing with Kenny Omega, Mick Foley, Ric Flair, Cody Rhodes, and Jerry himself. Was that a Lawler thing, or is that somebody else?
No, that's Mikel. That's our interior artist. Jerry does the, if you scroll down a little bit from the Kickstarter, or maybe now it's up, Jerry does Norman Rockwell-inspired covers. He's a big art fan, and it's a fun fact. I feel like I've been in more art museums with Jerry than probably every other human being on the planet, which is kind of a weird claim to fame. But he's a huge art nerd, and
yes.
You know, I live near the Norman Rockwell Museum, so whenever he's in town, we go to the art museum, the Rockwell Museum, and look over the stuff. And you always try to give your artists something that they're going to be excited to produce. And I think that he's done some really amazing stuff with our covers.
If it wasn't for Lance Russell and Jackie Fargo, Jerry would have ended up being an artist full time.
Correct. Oh yeah, no, he is professional grade. He's amazing, and it's one of the coolest things. Is like, I mean, in addition to being an amazing wrestler and an artist, he's also a world champion procrastinator. So a lot of times, and I know this now. I mean, it used to be sort of nerve wracking, but you know, he just tells me, he's like, just tell me on the day you need it done, and I'll get it done. And, you know, but a lot of times that involves me getting to watch him work on it, which is really cool. So, you know, I remember the very, very first cover he did for us wasn't a Norman Rockwell cover, but it was for when we were doing floppy books. And I sat in a hotel room with Samoa Joe. And we sat in his hotel room and watched him paint the cover. And it was really, really cool to see him, you know, get to, you know, putting down the strokes and everything.
Okay.
So, do you know the number of wrestlers you've met since you've started this, or is it just, I mean, have you met just a ton of wrestlers at being at conventions and all that?
Yeah, I know. I mean, I've been backstage at Raw a bunch of times. I mean, a lot of the guys that are big now are guys that, you know, were coming up when I was coming up. So, I mean, I know all the guys that came out of Ring of Honor and, you know, I think probably the only guys I really don't know or haven't met in a social setting would be Undertaker and Rock, I think. Outside of that, I think I've met just about everybody else.
From what I've heard, Undertaker has always been kept secret, sort of, to being from him by, you know, himself being secret and then the company protecting him. So I don't know many people.
Baby.
Yeah, I don't know many people that have actually met him.
Well, he's been doing a lot of Comic-Cons lately now that he's off the road. So, right. I mean, it's not as hard as it once was. We haven't been at the same Comic-Cons, or we haven't been, you know, when I've been backstage. I was backstage at SummerSlam when he wrestled Brock Lesnar, but there was a big controversy going on before that show, and they were in separate rooms, and it was a whole thing. So,
Do you have any? I mean, I bet I know that you're busy with conventions and promoting the Kickstarter campaign and Headlocked itself. What is your schedule like, especially around WrestleMania and going towards the end of the Kickstarter?
It's pretty crazy. This weekend, I'm in Jersey City for Capital Wrestling. It's their debut show. I'm actually really excited about it. Next weekend, I'll be at WrestleCon with MVP and Tugboat. MVP contributed a story to the last book, and Tugboat's contributing a piece of art to the book we're doing now. And then I'll be selling my books at Evolve and Shikara and Beyond Wrestling that are after WrestleCon. And then 2 weeks after that, I'm in Miami for SuperCon Retro with Booker T. The week after that, I'm in Chicago in C2E2 with Jerry Lawler, Lita, Gene Okerlund, and we'll have a few more names by the time by the time that rolls around. Fantastic. And then the following weekend, we're in Kansas City for Planet Comic Con with Jerry Lawler and Ric Flair. So it's a crazy little stretch for me, and you know I'm working at the same time that this is all going on. So there's not a lot of sleep during Kickstarter time. I usually gain about 15 pounds in stress weight. Cause even when it's going good, like it's going good, you know, like I don't necessarily look at it as the fundraiser per se. Like I look at it as a pre-order. So I just want as many people to get a copy of the book as possible, because, you know, obviously then that tells me that people like what we're doing. So, you know, it'll never be enough, I guess.
Has it come as a surprise to you that so many wrestlers are artists and writers and things like that? Because I wouldn't have expected that many of them to be talented in other ways.
I think everybody's got multiple skills. I mean, you know, and I think ultimately, too, I mean, they're all storytellers. I mean, that's what they do with most of their life. They're telling stories in the ring. They're telling stories in the car, you know, in between towns. So, I mean, it's not necessarily, like, the storytelling part of it doesn't surprise me at all. I mean, that's just what
they
do.
And they do work on campus.
And then, excellent. Well played, sir.
Thank you.
And then, as far as the art goes, I mean, you know, there's not a lot of jobs in art. So I think there's a ton of people that have art skills that you don't even know about. You know, like probably some guy in your office that, you know, can draw, but he doesn't have an avenue with which to make money with it. So it's a tough, it's always surprising, and it always excites me. Like, you know, somebody will come up to me, you know, like Ken Anderson wasn't somebody that I would have expected that had art skills, but he did. And, you know, Tugboat's another one where, you know, you hear a name and you're like, really? And I'm like, okay, let's see what you got. So
I bet you it's shocking fun. How much of a master he is at it.
Well, the puns are flying around there.
That's why we have John.
That's my job.
That is one job.
Does he prefer to be referred to as Tugboat? Because, you know, he was Typhoon. I'm sure he doesn't want to be referred to as Shockmaster, but...
I just call him Fred, so...
Oh, okay.
It's hard to know what he prefers. I think for a while he was probably sort of... I don't know if he necessarily embraced the Shockmaster part of his persona, but I think as he's seen, you know... The digital age has made weird things popular, you know, like I don't think, you know, Booker T's famous, N-word promo there has become like a cult thing on the internet. And, you know, for a long time, you know, that sort of went away just because it wasn't, you know, the digital age wasn't there. And then it sort of found its way back into prominence and, you know, you just sort of have to roll with it. So, you know, he's been, you know, they made the action figure that's upside down with the Shockmaster.
It's awesome.
Yes. You know, yes, he has a shirt. he has a shirt of himself, like, coming through the shirt that says, I came in like a wrecking ball. So, you know,
that's great.
He's embraced
it. Yeah, he has, because he did it on the Edge and Christian show, too, where they did a thing. That was great that he played around.
And he's really the nicest guy. He's like everybody's uncle, man. He's a real sweetheart. So he and I, among most of the guys, honestly, have been really easy to get to know. I've been really lucky.
I always wondered what his relationship was with Cody or Dustin, since he's related to him, but I guess that's private stuff. But, I mean, I always wondered.
Yeah, I'm unsure. I don't think that's anything we've ever talked about. But,
right.
You know, could be. They're on the same book together, so.
Yeah, okay. There we go.
Do you have any funny stories from the convention life that come to mind? You know, just whether it deals with wrestlers or not, or interesting stories or anything?
Sure, man. Well, this year at San Diego Comic-Con, I actually was able to win the DD Pro Heavy Metalweight title from... I actually won it from Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian, and then Joey Ryan took it away from me. You know, it was always my dream to be a Japanese wrestling champion, and you know, now I am. So
awesome!
That was a lot of fun. We tried to do funny stuff. We filmed a little skit at New York Comic Con this year with Jill Thompson is one of our artists, and she had designed gear for Daniel Bryan and made a very famous CM Punk shirt. We filmed a bit where she got into an argument with Noel Foley, and like Mick was trying to break them up, and then Joey Styles pops out of nowhere and goes, "Can't fight." So,
yeah, her first art job was for a friend of mine on the anthology that we put together. So,
yeah, Jill was she was the first person in comics who really embraced us. I mean, she's a wrestling fan through and through, and I'm like, she's so talented. So, I'm always happy I'm happy that she's been a part, you know, of the book for a long time. But we film some goofy stuff. We put on our YouTube channel. At New York Comic Con this year, somebody had walked by while Ric Flair was signing and said, "Hey, Rick, I wish you were my dad." And he looked up and said, "Who knows, kid? Maybe I am."
So. That's a classic Rick line.
That's great.
So, yeah, we've... I was at a show with Christopher Daniels and Frankie Kazarian, and Chris Daniels, we stopped a celebrity from getting arrested. I mean, Chris did all the heavy lifting for the most part, but it was kind of a crazy night. So, yeah, I get to do a lot of cool stuff on the road, and I get to, you know, I've got a lot of weird, like, I've been in a lot of weird circumstances. I've been in Hollywood parties where I was the least famous guy in the room. You know, I was on a party in a yacht one time at San Diego Comic Con. Like, I don't know. I've got to do some cool stuff, and I had dinner with Joe Manganiello and some people from True Blood one time with Ken Anderson, because Joe and Ken were in Behind Enemy Lines together. So,
oh, wow.
You know, for a guy that just writes an independent wrestling comic that a ton of people have never even heard of, like, I've got to do a lot of cool stuff, so it kind of makes all the miles worth it, and the hours spent worth it to, you know, to get these ridiculous sort of experiences.
Yeah, I know people that do the convention circuit, and it can be exhausting but rewarding in many ways too. So,
I mean, for me, I work nights, so a lot of times I will leave work on a Thursday morning at like 4 a.m. and drive right to the airport, get on a plane, fly somewhere, you know, take a cab from the airport to the show, set up and do the show without sleep. You know, I turn my schedule 24 hours. I do the show for 3 days, take a red eye out, fly home, you know, drive home, take a quick shower, and then drive to work. So, you know, that's what a lot of my, you know, when you see me on conventions and stuff, that's a lot of what, you know, what goes into it. So, but it's all part of the greater good, so,
yeah.
You know, hopefully in the long term it pays off for us.
So, I'm assuming everybody knows about Kickstarter, so if you want to promote some of the rewards, because there's a ton of them that people can get, and you're almost at your goal. I mean, there's still over a month left, so and the goal looks like it's headed that way to be reached. So what can people get by pledging?
You can get anything, really. Like, we try to make it as accessible as possible. So, like, even though we're kickstarting the fourth book, like, if you're new to Headlock, you can pledge to get the copy of the first book. You can get any number of books. You can get one book, two books, three books, four books. We have hoodies. We have T-shirts for people that don't like to read but would still like to support us. We have digital copies, you know, if you don't want to pay shipping. We have, you know, we have stuff signed. We have prints that are signed by Finn Balor and Sasha Banks. We have that Mikel has done. We were, Phil Singer Games was cool enough to make a Headlock expansion pack, and we're offering those as well. So some of our characters will go into their game, which is really cool to me, just because, I mean, I've seen them forever growing up in, like, old PWI magazines and whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
We have books. We have some books that are signed by, like, 15 people from Lucha Underground. We have books that are signed by... We have a poster that almost everybody that's contributed so far has signed. I mean, it's signed by Joe and AJ Styles and Jerry and Booker T and Ken and Daniels and Rob and Hurricane. We have a print from New York Comic Con that we did a mock-up of an old Justice League International cover, and it's signed by Joey Styles and Ric Flair and Noel and Mick Foley and Jerry and Joe Thompson and Mikel and myself. You know, there's a lot of really cool stuff there. And then my favorite thing is that people can, you know, it's a high dollar tier, but people can be drawn into the book as a wrestler. And, you know, we never... Like, we've faced all kinds of resistance getting this project off the ground to where it is now. And, you know, Kickstarter is what made it really click for us. And, you know, there's certain people that have donated a good amount of money to help us see this thing through. And they get rewarded by actually becoming a part of it. So, I mean, everything with Headlock has been a grassroots movement since day one. And then the people that have supported us the most actually get to become a part of the story. And, like, I think that's really cool. Like, one of the guys... you know, who was an early, you know, he had pledged to become a wrestler. Like, that character ended up, like, it wasn't my intention when I put it in there, but the character ended up becoming a sort of a central character in the book. And, like, you know, we're doing these Phil Singer Games cards, and now his character is going to be one of those cards. And, you know, Joe Thompson has painted a credit page with this guy as a wrestler on it, and all those cool things. So, you know, that's probably my favorite thing, just because, you know, like I said, it's been such a grassroots thing, and the people, you know, the people that have been there at the beginning and the people that have helped us the most, you know, sort of, you know, become a part of the whole thing. And that makes me, extremely happy.
I mean, I think that is kind of the story of the wrestling fan and wrestling in general. Wrestling is a very grassroots thing, you know? I mean, fans are kind of a tight-knit group, and there's not many of us, it seems like, sometimes, and sometimes it seems like there's a lot of us. So that's cool that it's bled over into the book.
Yeah, no, I always try to do everything the right way. You know, like I said, I try to... Like, the people that have helped me, I try to give them space at my Comic Cons and help them make money. You know, they've helped me get exposure. And, you know, I'm not necessarily in this to get rich, per se. You know, if I did this for 10 years and I didn't make any money and I didn't lose any money, like, I would be the happiest guy ever. So,
the experiences alone have got to be invaluable. You know, like, I'm very jealous of all the wrestlers you get to meet and all the situations you probably get put in, not many people get to do that that aren't wrestlers.
Like, here's a random thing. Like, one day I was asleep, because I work nights, and it was 10 o'clock in the morning, and I was woken up by a phone call from Booker T asking me if I knew Vanilla Ice's phone number, because he wanted to get him on his radio show. So, you know what I mean? Like, it's just a random thing. Like, you know, I pick up the phone, like, hey, Mike, it's Book. Hey, do you know Vanilla Ice's phone number? I'm trying to get him on the radio show. Like, no, man, sorry, I haven't met him. One of the guys. Oh, okay, that's cool. If you know anybody, you know, send him my way.
That's
hilarious. It's just a random thing. You're like, oh, that just happened, you know? So
I work nights as well, and so I can imagine, like, you're in a haze anyway, and Booker D calling for Vanilla Ice's phone number is is even more hilarious when you work nights.
Michael, I do have to ask you a question about that very seriously. Did the phone ring five times?
I'm unsure because I was probably asleep for the first couple rings. So we could probably, for the sake of the story, we could probably say that it did.
Awesome.
And did you have Vanilla Ice's phone number?
I didn't, no. I've got some, weird phone numbers in my phone, but not Vanilla Ice, sadly. He's somebody that I haven't met, but I'd be, you know, I'd be down to meet Vanilla Ice. But.
You mentioned that you work long hours. Is your regular job in any way related to comic books or wrestling or anything like that?
Not in the slightest. I actually manage a warehouse. You know, so it's just, it's boxes and forklifts and whatever for, you know, 10, 11, 12 hours a day. And then, you know, I'm home and I sit down and it's this until it's time to go back. So that's kind of what's happened because, you know, my responsibility has sort of expanded at my job and the book is sort of, you know, this was the year that everything sort of started to click a little bit. So it's, everything is sort of, you know, out of my control now. So I just flail around. I feel like my life is like a giant, like I'm running from a giant wave and, you know, the hitch in your step is going to swallow you up. So it's, generally how I live day to day. So.
So before we let you off here, you know, WrestleMania is just a few weeks away now. And the show tonight is talking about WrestleMania moments. So do you have any that stick out to you either growing up or I'm sure you've been to WrestleMania while doing the book.
Before you answer that, what was your first WrestleMania?
WrestleMania 1.
Awesome, me too. Were these game the other guy. Guys? They're young punks. So
three was probably mine. So,
Jonathan, what was your first one?
The first one that I watched.
Yes.
It's hard to say. I remember. I checked out a lot of videotapes of WrestleManias, among other wrestling things, from Blockbuster or other video stores of the time. So I don't remember which order I saw them in. But I definitely remember seeing all of those early ones, maybe out of order.
Right. Okay. Go ahead, Michael.
So I've been to one of my favorite WrestleMania experiences was I was actually a guest of 2K Sports last year and I got to watch WrestleMania from a luxury box, which is pretty cool.
Oh, really?
Like, it's pretty awesome.
Fully catered, full.
Well, I was like, there, but I wasn't in no guest box.
That was pretty good. I'm not gonna lie. That was it almost ruined me for wrestling. I'd be like, I don't know if I can watch wrestling anymore without somebody refreshing my drink.
Man.
So that was cool.
I was sitting there having to go to the bathroom and not dare go.
I find as long as you don't look down, you can just do it right in your seat.
You know? Oh, there you go.
If you're just standing up, you just take it out. Just don't look down.
Well, that's the thing is, I was way up. I would have been dribbling on people's heads. So I probably wouldn't have been a good idea.
But, you know, I've been to a couple of them. I was at the Ric Flair's retirement WrestleMania. I was at the Donald Trump WrestleMania.
Jeez.
Oh, man.
I'm trying to think.
Okay, I officially hate this guy, man.
No, so honestly, like outside of WrestleMania, I was also at the Royal Rumble 92 where Flair won the belt because that's where I live.
Wow, and you then, did? Really?
Oh, I was also live at the Montreal Screwjob, so I've had a lot of crazy. I was at Samoa Joe versus Kenta Kobashi, which I consider my greatest live experience as a wrestling fan, in the New Yorker Hotel. I would put that crowd up against any crowd.
So what's your background? Where do you come from? What was the wrestling you grew up with?
What's that?
What was the wrestling you grew up with?
WWE.
Okay. All right. Well, yeah.
I live in New York, so.
Right. Okay. Okay. Oh, well, I thought you said that, but I didn't remember correctly, so that's cool.
But so I've had a lot of really cool live experiences. I've been to a lot of shows and, you know, I like anything. I watched two guys in a high school gym, you know, in their first match. Like, there's a value to that.
Sure.
I think that wrestling to me is like jazz music. Like when you take the live component out of it, it doesn't necessarily feel the same. Like, I mean, it's cool on TV, don't get me wrong, but like there's nothing better than being in a small arena.
Well, and, live is best, and live on television is the next best. But there is a reason why for years SmackDown sort of just kind of withered, and while some of the other shows don't do as well as Raw, even outside of the fact that it's WWE, is that there is something about the live factor. Even though you know it's, you know, on television, it's still live, and there is something there. And of course, you're right. There's nothing like actually being there, because the electricity in the air is completely different. Even no matter how small or big the event may be, because I've been, like you know, to, like you said, the National Guard armories and high school gyms, and then you know, last year I was at Texas Stadium, or not Texas Stadium, but you know, Jerry's World. But so, I mean,
that's the only way you'd get me into the Dallas Cowboys Stadium.
Uh-oh. Okay. I let the WWF thing slide.
I assume you're a Giants fan.
No, I'm actually a Redskins fan, Redskins. Believe it or not. I played football for a long time. I played football for a long time, and when I was a kid, I played center. And, you know, the Redskins had the Hogs. Like, nobody ever really celebrated offensive line play, so that's kind of how I got into their
Now I hate
so got to become a fan. Oh no, so, listen, I'm a fan and I hate them too. So I mean, it's not an easy team to be a fan of these days.
Well, no, not I guess, but you know, but see, man, that's one thing. B, it's one thing if you're a Giants fan, but a Redskins fan. Okay. See, I'm a Dallas, Texas guy. I'm world class, you know, guy.
Sure.
Yeah. We're the pro wrestling, pro football roundtable now. No.
Von Erich country even before we did in the Cowboy country. So
outside of the live experiences that you've had at WrestleMania, like maybe growing up or one that you saw on TV, are there any moments that like stick out to you and that were really cool to you?
I mean, the Bret Hart Steve Austin WrestleMania 13 match is probably one of my favorite matches of all time. I mean, it's definitely, you know, top five for sure. I definitely love that match. I'm trying to think what else.
That match was so important to Stone Cold's popularity too.
Oh yeah.
Just a master class of booking and. You know, I mean, I feel like everybody's tried to pull off the double turn since, but I don't think anybody's done it.
No, it's the sheer storytelling of it
at all.
The sheer storytelling of it. I mean, that is a pinnacle. There's no question. No question.
Yeah, that was definitely up there. And then obviously, you know, people don't talk about it anymore. But I mean, at the time, the Chris Benoit WrestleMania 20 finish was. Yep. You know, it was a pretty amazing thing to see a guy with that, with that body style, you know.
I mean, I've always said this, and then, of course, there's always exception to prove the rule, but I always thought that nobody went into that main event believing that Benoit went away the champion. Hoping, certainly. Rooting, certainly, because I certainly was hoping and rooting. But deep down, there's no way I believed it. And so when it happened, just the eruption of excitement and true marking out is unbelievable. So yeah, that's definitely one. Unfortunately, it has been marred by other situations, but great moment.
I was live at WrestleMania 30 where Daniel Bryan won the belt, and that was variety of reasons, obviously for the Undertaker and Lesnar, and then for the Daniel Bryan celebration, like super historic show. I mean, it wasn't the most enjoyable show, I guess, you know, in a vacuum, but just being a part of history and seeing all that stuff, that was really neat. And I mean, I was selling my books at Ring of Honor shows for years. So like, I knew Daniel Bryan and, you know, and he's friends with Jill Thompson and all of that. So like seeing him achieve what he achieved was a real cool thing. And to see just, you know, the people, it was such a great celebration. I mean, people lost their minds. So, you know, that's always a fun thing to be a part of.
It's funny because that went through my head because I thought I was even going to say that the Daniel Bryan thing was kind of similar. That so much had happened that there was a lot of hope and there was a lot of rooting, but maybe deep down we weren't exactly believing that it would happen, and it did, and it was amazing.
Well, I know you have to go, Mike, so I just want to thank you for coming on and sharing stories with us. It's been great, and we wish you all the luck on the Kickstarter. But yeah, thanks, Michael, for coming on, and we wish you all the luck in the world for this book. It is a one-of-a-kind thing. You're right. The only comic I really remember getting into was the Undertaker comic, and it was really bad, but it was the only thing, you know, like, because it wasn't wrestling at all. It was they like blended wrestling and superhero, and then you can't really do that. So, yeah, it's nice to have something new and fresh in the comic world.
Thanks, man. I really appreciate that. And it was a fun conversation.
All right. Well, enjoy WrestleMania and all your conventions. And if anybody's near them, go say hi and tell them you heard them on the Pro Wrestling Roundtable show. And
buy that comic book.
Yeah, buy all his merchandise. I'm sure he'll love it.
Thanks so much, guys.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
Take care.
Hello, Marvel Universe! The Earth Station MCU podcast is your home for all things related to the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Join our debrief as we discuss Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Agent Carter, upcoming and past favorite Marvel movies, cosplay, comics history, toys, games, interviews, and all things MCU. Whether you're a hero or a villain, a new viewer, or have been reading comics since you were a kid, there's something for you on Earth Station MCU.
Vincent Mann has brought you such exciting ventures like his own bodybuilding federation, his own football organization, and even his very own network. Well, get ready as he brings to you his attempt to help the children with former WWE superstars. That's right, the VKM After School Program will bring your children educational and fun activities such as bird watching with Coco Beware, playing time with George the Animal Steel, pin the name on Ed Leslie, fun with farm animals with Terry Taylor, tennis lessons with Jim Cornette, woodworking with Hacksaw Jim Duggan, math and English tutoring with Sid Vicious and Scott Steiner, poetry corner with Leaping Lanny Poffo, and arts and crafts with the Bushwhackers. Be sure to enroll soon before classes get all booked up.
Hey, folks, it's WrestleMania time. You may not know that since it's kind of a obscure, not very well-known wrestling show that WWF puts on every single year. But in case you do know, we are going to talk about it because it's that time, as I said. And this time we're going to talk about some of our memories, maybe some of our ideas about what's going to be happening, and then our thoughts about some of the matches, whatever. And then we will follow up after WrestleMania is over with a review and some discussion of it afterwards with some other folks. But for now, we're just going to freewheel some conversation about WrestleMania in general.
Yeah, so, the next three episodes, I should say, are going to be very WrestleMania heavy. So
if you hate WrestleMania,
yeah, this is the memories part, and then we'll
then they'll do the preview and then a review. So if you don't like WWE and WrestleMania, you can take a vacation for a little while.
Yeah,
but we've still got interviews and other stuff, so you know you can skip past this part, but you can listen to the rest of it or you can just listen to my voice. I mean, that's got a good voice. Well, I don't necessarily like what I'm saying. No one really likes what I'm saying.
All right, so with Kingston's interview, we already talked a little bit about our first WrestleManias and and how that went. But so I don't really know. Like, I guess for me, I want to start off with WrestleMania 6. I assume Jonathan probably has the same, like, since he's a Ultimate Warrior fan, like, that was my WrestleMania. Like, I know a lot of people don't like the later ones, you know, that 6 through, I think, like, what, 12, a lot of people look down upon. But I love WrestleMania 6. I mean, I just loved it. I was a big Warrior fan. I even had a, like, we went to this, like, flea market thing, and they made these plastic license plates, and you could get whatever letter you wanted. You could get whatever, you could get it to say whatever you wanted. And I used to have it. I think it's been thrown away since, but I've got Hogan versus Warrior, and then I think it was, what, 1990? I got all those on there. But,
wow.
I mean,
I didn't know there
was that many on there. When I was a kid, well, it wasn't like a it was like an official license plate. Like, I was a kid. It was just like like the one you put on the front of the car.
Oh, I see.
You know. Of course, I didn't have a car because I was, you know, 8 or whatever. but it hung in my room for a very long time. And
I would have made it say Terry Boulder versus Dingo Warrior.
Dingo Warrior. But for better or worse, I mean, you know, the match isn't the greatest, I guess, as far as if I want to look at a technical wrestling match. I think it is one of the better matches that both of them
had. I think it was well beyond anybody's expectations. I think it's a fine match. I think it certainly went beyond my expectations. I expected it to be crap.
Yeah.
Because it's Hogan and Warrior. But they put on a pretty darn good match. I mean, again, you know, it's the same argument that Al Snow has made about WrestleMania 3, where everybody talks about the great match, you know, that Steamboat and Stuka made. And it was groundbreaking, and it was a great technical match. But that doesn't change the fact that they were there to see Andre and Hogan. And it doesn't change the fact that that's who sold the tickets. And it doesn't change the fact that that match was important and it was a great match because of what it presented. Because working is not necessarily the same thing as technical wrestling or wrestling. Working a match is getting the crowd into it and buying into it and wanting to spend their tickets for it. So in that case, there's no question that the Warrior versus Hogan worked. And they pulled it off pretty well, I think.
So at that time, WrestleMania was not an easy thing to get because pay-per-view didn't exist. It was the closed circuit television. Mm-hmm. I don't even know how you got that. Like, we didn't. We certainly didn't have it. So,
you know, I honestly do not remember how I first saw WrestleMania 1. I do know I watched it because I was desperate to, because Roddy and well, particularly Roddy. I honestly, I've gotten too old. I can't remember exactly how I watched it, but I did.
I mean, WrestleMania 6 was the first WrestleMania I saw live because that was the one time I was living in Tampa at the time. And
you don't mean live in person.
Well, I don't know. I'll tell you the story and then we'll go from there. But so in Tampa, they have I believe it's called the Sun Dome, or it was at the time. And you bought a ticket. I mean, it was a big stadium. I mean, big arena. And you bought a ticket, and you watched it on this gigantic screen, like a movie screen.
Right.
So that's how I watched it. I mean, my mom bought me a ticket. My parents had just gotten divorced, and so I got a lot of free things because of that. I got my Nintendo, and I got a ticket to WrestleMania 6. So I know it wasn't live, but it's sort of – I mean, as a kid – I felt like I was there. I mean, because you were surrounded by fans. Like, people, I mean, it was the same exact experience as far as a fan experience of watching it, because people were into it. I mean, and I do remember it cut off during the match, during the final match. And, it just blinked out for, like, 20 seconds. And, I mean, people were going crazy. Then it restarted and it was fine, but but yeah, so that's the closest live I've ever been to WrestleMania, I guess.
Hey, was better than me until recently. No, I mean, I probably must have seen it on closed circuit, but where and how, I don't remember. I really don't. I mean, because, let's see, that was, what year, 84, 85? I always forget.
Yeah.
I was out of high school, 81, so I was early 20s, so I don't know. Who knows? It didn't make a difference. I know that was the first one I ever watched, but what about you, Jonathan?
Well, I never had a chance to see them live, but I would often figure out what channel on the cable box it was on, and I would at least hear it and sort of try to watch it with the big squiggly line down the middle. But I would do that with everything, SummerSlam, Survivor Series, anything like that. But we never got pay-per-views in my house. But like I mentioned before, during our interview, when I guess in the early days of me really getting into wrestling, I discovered that you could rent the tapes at video stores. So mm-hmm. I would just go rent. I'm pretty sure I started with WrestleMania 1 and just rented that one, watched it, took it back, got WrestleMania 2, watched it, got WrestleMania 3, and worked my way up to wherever I was at the time. It would have been late 80s probably. But yes, Richard, you referenced this earlier, WrestleMania 6, Ultimate Warrior vs. Hulk Hogan, is definitely one of my favorite matches of all time, and certainly one of my favorite Ultimate Warrior matches, because it was just the, you know, Hulk Hogan was the guy for so long. And I was never a huge fan, but I didn't dislike him. You know, I guess I got caught up or swept up in Hulkamania as much as a lot of people did, but he was never my favorite. But, you know, he was the John Cena of his time. He was the guy that was unbeatable, and everybody loved him. And all of a sudden, there's this other guy who's kind of the same. He was kind of like the Goldberg before Goldberg, almost, the Ultimate Warrior was. They was just plowing through people and then...
Short,
you know,
matches.
Yeah, and you just always wondered when is... I never thought that he and Hulk Hogan would face each other, because at that time there was such a clear distinction between heels and faces, and both of those guys were clearly faces, and then they faced each other, and it was the first time I remember there being a split crowd, and even watching it myself, I was like, I'm not really sure who to cheer for. Because, you know, I'd be happy with either one of these guys winning, but of course I'd be much happier if Ultimate Warrior won.
I was about to say, I know who I was rooting for.
I just didn't think it would happen. I thought there'd be something screwy that happened, some interference or something like that, and there wasn't really. Well, I guess there was to some extent, but, you know, for the most part, it was just Ultimate Warrior beat Hulk Hogan, and he was a champion, and it was so shocking to me as a kid, you know. Hulk Hogan was beaten, defeated, and there was really no question about it, even though I guess he popped right up, so there is controversy a little bit, but
Well, Hogan didn't want to lay down. I mean, you know, I have seen him talk about that match, and I mean, of course, WWE, there was no, you know, love between them and Ultimate Warrior up until, you know, a year before or a couple years before he passed away. But, I mean, Hogan, they never paint that as a good picture. Like, Hogan just blames his, you know, just everything, his kind of downfall after that. Like, he told Vince it was a bad idea, and, like, nobody wanted Warrior to be the champion. But, of course, he was wrong, because I did. I mean, I was a Hogan fan, but then I was an Ultimate Warrior fan. That's what happens. I mean, you know, sometimes you have to pass a torch unless you're John Cena.
And yeah.
I kid with John Cena, but...
So, well, go ahead, John.
Well, I mean, I don't want to dwell on one match from a WrestleMania that is not commonly a favorite, but just to, you know... The topic of the show is WrestleMania memories. So I didn't watch one live until, I don't know, well into my adulthood. I'm not sure why that is, but I would just, you know, I would watch Raw the next night and find out what happened or read about it on the internet or whatever. And then, but then I, of course, you know, just
could have had something to do with that $40 prize ticket.
Yeah, that probably had something.
See, the reason I was able to do it, really, honestly, is that I had a couple, three guys that we went chipped in together. Because I probably wouldn't have been able to do it otherwise myself, because it's a pretty hefty price tag.
I didn't get pay-per-views until the late 90s. I mean, it was certainly after the NWO, you know, and all that.
I was getting them all the way along. And, of course, then figured out I was a WCW guy, too, so I was doing those as well. But, like I said, thankfully, I had more than one friend that was into wrestling at the same time, so I was able to split the bill a lot of times. And I didn't get every single one, especially when they started doing a lot more. I didn't get a lot of those in your house ones, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. I mean, who would get a pay-per-view every month?
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know what I miss about WrestleMania? I miss the little tiny rings that they came down the entrance with.
Yeah, the little
rings. I love them.
It's funny because they could have brought those back last year because they actually did bring wheels, the bigger guys through the ring during the Rumble this last time.
Oh.
And that's why they cut away from the camera, cut to the ring, because like Big Show and those guys, they were actually wheeling down there. Well, unlike little Segway type things or whatever. So I'd rather them do the little wrestling ring, you know, thingies. I agree with you. How iconic is that great shot of Bobby and
Andre
going back after the loss and Bobby being despondent? You know, that's a great shot.
Was 3 the last time they did that, WrestleMania 3?
I think they did it in 4. Pretty sure they did.
Okay.
A couple of years later, maybe not 4, because that was at the Plaza, and that wasn't as far to go. But I think there was a couple other times I remember, because Roddy, it broke on him, and so he just ran down to the ring, and it was a long ways, you know.
Another memorable one for me was Jake the Snake and Alice Cooper coming out.
Yes, indeed. Oh, well, yeah. Actually, I was just going to say, just before we move off WrestleMania 6, because, you know, again, Hogan and Ultimate Warrior, while I praised it was definitely not the match I was the most looking forward to. And I wanted to go, and I looked back on the card just to refresh myself and to see which match it was that I would probably most look forward to. I mean, the person I looked most to see was Roddy and maybe Dusty and Randy. And so I was into those matches, but probably the best match, the one I expected the most out of, was Ted DiBiase defending the $1 million championship against Jake Roberts. So that was my match, my top match.
Yeah, I was a big Jake fan too, but for some reason I don't remember that match or the excitement behind it. You know, it wasn't flashy for me, I guess.
Well, no, it wasn't as flashy.
Now, one WrestleMania that everybody consistently hates is one of my favorites, because as a kid it was my favorite. Now, it's a pretty terrible WrestleMania, but it was the first outdoor WrestleMania, and it's WrestleMania 9.
Oh, yeah, 9's horrible.
Mean Gene in a toga, come on.
Oh, no, it's got its greatness. I mean, it's so bad it's good now.
Oh, it
mean,
is. It's so bad. It is, I love it. I still watch it every once in a while. It is not a well-booked show, but...
That's the thing. Honestly, I do think that is one of the shows that gets a little bit more hate than it truly deserves. And I think it's probably better than WrestleMania... 7 with Slaughter. I think it's better than that overall. I think it gets a lot of hate because of the ending, you know, because the Hogan winning and everything.
And
it's
the only time in WrestleMania history that the belt has switched twice during the event.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, people hate Hogan. I mean, you know, Yoko defeated Bret, and then Hogan came down and defeated Yoko.
And also, it unfortunately is the same show that The Undertaker took on
Giant Gonzalez.
Yeah.
Oh, poor Giant Gonzalez.
Yes. But, I mean, that had the Steiner brothers and the Head Shrinkers, which is a great match.
But if you look at WrestleMania, like, 9, like, it felt special and different. And it was outdoors. So, like, as a kid, I was just, like, amazed by it. Like, that was the pageantry that I think... WrestleMania, you know, when I think of WrestleMania, that's what I think of.
Yeah.
Well, nowadays they only do WrestleMania in venues that are outdoor.
Correct.
Right?
Yeah. I mean they don't do indoor anymore.
They don't
which
do
is
indoors
awesome.
No more.
I don't know when that started, but it's not been that long ago.
I think it started the year after it was here in Atlanta because it was at the Georgia, which I was lucky enough to get to go to that in 2011. Mm-hmm. And then the next year in Miami, it was outdoors, and it's been outdoors ever since.
Yep.
Now,
technically, the one in Texas was indoors.
Well, they closed the roof.
Yeah.
Oh, they did close. It was closed.
Yeah, it was closed.
Why is that? Because it was raining?
I don't have no idea. I guess, I mean, because I don't remember it being particularly, it wasn't bad weather. I know it wasn't raining. I think because they wanted to trap the noise, and they since they had that ability to do it. I guess I remember very vividly, you know, at the end, you could hear the fireworks going off.
But you couldn't see them.
Oh, yeah.
That's a bummer.
Yeah. I was like, open that damn roof. You know? Come on. But, yeah, no. Yeah, so, I guess technically they have had an indoors one.
So, if anybody's listening in WWE, Knoxville, Tennessee has one of the biggest stadiums, not professional, but biggest stadiums in Neyland Stadium. So if you ever want to have WrestleMania here, just come a knocking.
Well, you know, and what's the over-under that they're going to go back to Atlanta with this new stadium?
I mean,
I'm kind of surprised that they've already announced where it's going to be next year, I think, right?
And it's not. It's New Orleans, isn't it?
New Orleans again, yeah.
Oh,
which
that's
I've heard everybody that loves the New Orleans one because, you know, that's definitely a great city to have a party in. So,
I think that's what they look at anymore is more of the city and stuff. And
well,
I mean,
the same thing the Super Bowl's done as well.
Sure.
Because the place makes the difference. You know, it really does. It's not just necessarily the stadium, it's the place, you know.
And the Super Bowl is going to be here next year in that new dome.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, it is. I don't know what the over-under is, but they will be in that building sooner than later. Just like, and the only reason, and hopefully this time they were smarter and they got booked as soon as they, maybe Vince or his people found out it was going to be built, because it took so long to come to Dallas only because everybody got jumped ahead of them. Because the Super Bowl got ahead of them and the NCAA and the NBA finals and so on and so forth, because, you know, but they finally got here, thankfully.
So, you know, we kind of skipped over WrestleMania 3 in a way, but, I mean, it's hard to...
it's hard to say anything new about WrestleMania 3.
It's iconic, like, for me as a kid, Hogan slamming Andre, even though that really wasn't the first time.
Yeah.
It's so iconic. And, you know, Macho and Ricky, I mean...
Again, you know, everybody always talks about, you know, Hogan and Andre, obviously, and that stands to reason. And then everybody talks about Randy and Steamboat, which I was far more in... I can't say I was far more into that match, because I'm always an Andre guy, and I was really hoping that Andre was going to squash Hogan. Really, against all hope, I was hoping that Andre would win. But, you know, he didn't, and that's all fine, so on and so forth. But I definitely was looking forward to it. And they built up to the match incredibly well, you know, with Bobby as the instigator, so on and so forth. And, of course, the Randy and Steamboat story was great. And of course, one of the greatest iconic matches of all time. But that was not – neither one of those was the match I was most looking forward to. The match I was most looking forward to was Roddy Piper versus Adrian Adonis. And particularly, not just because it was Roddy, and also I was a fan of Adrian as well, but because that was Ronnie's big comeback. He had been away doing They Live and this, that, and the other, and he come back to the big baby face. And
Hell Comes the Frog, too.
Yeah, Hell Comes the Frog, too. But he had come back, you know, and he was this big baby face now, and everybody loved him. And it was just gratifying to me as an old Roddy fan that, you know, everybody who hated him now loved him.
Well, and so that match is interesting because you have the famous Roddy and Goldust feud, which is kind of, you know, I mean, Goldust was certainly a character sort of like Adrian Adonis.
Yes.
You know, to the 10th degree, I guess. But so that's cool. I mean, Roddy is like the normal everyman, so to put him with these, you know, the characters that they were, It was always entertaining.
Yeah, and
I like the Backlot Brawl.
Oh, that Backlot Brawl is one of my favorite matches of all time. I love that damn match.
Most time those matches aren't good, but they...
No,
I mean,
that was very good. Well, here's the reason why, because it's interesting to say that, because I told you before we started recording that I listened to the newest wrestling with Bruce Pritchard. And it was all about Roddy and his relationship with Roddy and all of his stuff that he had done in WWE while Bruce was working there. And, of course, one of those was the Backlot Brawl. And the reason it happened, even, was because Razor refused to work with Goldust. They had already started this feud with them. And then it was supposed to pay off at WrestleMania, and then Razor pulled the plug on it and didn't want to work with him. So they were stuck, and they were trying to figure out what to do. And then Bruce said, well, what about Roddy? And they pitched it to Roddy, and he said, sure, why not? So Roddy, but here's the deal, because, of course, that was all, except for the end part, that was all filmed on an actual lot in Hollywood, because they were in Los Angeles. And that stuff was pre-recorded like a week before. And they did this whole freaking thing on this, basically this set of a set of, you know, Backlot. And what made it work was that Dustin and Roddy really did beat the shit out of each other. They just beat the living dog snot out of each other. And to the point, actually, Roddy broke his wrist.
Man.
And had to have it put in a cast and so on and so forth. And then when it come time a week later to do the end part there, you know, where they go to the arena and they go into the arena, he had to take the cast off, but it wasn't completely healed. So that's why, if you remember, there's a point there where he grabs something and starts wrapping his wrist. And that's why he's doing it, because it's broke. And he's basically trying to, you know, put tape on it, whatever, to make it, you know, not be as loose. And then they did the big finish and so on and so forth. And basically, he's the one that Dustin's told this story too before. Is that it was all Roddy's call for him to hit him with the car, you know, and Roddy actually wanted to crash the Bronco into the limo, but Vince wouldn't let him do it because he didn't want, you know, because just so much could go wrong, you know, somebody get hurt. He told Dustin that, okay, well, they won't let me do that. Then just when you get to there, and just open your door and don't get out, and I'll just hit the door and knock it off. But he missed.
Jeez.
But yeah, that's one of my absolute. There's three WrestleMania things for me that are meaningful to me. That my favorite Roddy moments are, of course, the first one. That's iconic. It's, you know, the first WrestleMania main event versus Hogan, so on and so forth. That's one of the great things of all time. The other one is the Backlot Brawl, and, you know, the Adrian Adonis fight is, so I'll say four of them, because, you know, that actually was the birth of Brutus Beefcake, which we mentioned before, being the barber, because they shaved or cut Adrian's head. But the other one, of course, was actually the one match that it was actually a great wrestling match, and that was his IC title match against Bret Hart, which was a fantastic freaking match. The best pure wrestling match that Roddy ever did.
Bret Hart is one of my favorite wrestlers of all time. I have his autobiography, and it's a heartbreaking kind of life he's lived, but Bret Hart is one of the best.
Yeah, well, and I'm always was thankful for Bret that worked out the way that it did. But I learned later that, you know, it was because he loved and respected Roddy, and they put together a great match. Of course, you know, the big controversy is, was it an accidental hard way, or was it a blade job? Because Vince was, of course, pissed because he doesn't like blood. And but that was Roddy, and regardless, it was totally Roddy and Bret's call to do that, obviously. But it worked, and that's what matters.
Well, and then WrestleMania 10, you had Owen versus Bret,
yes,
which was you know, greatness. I mean, so much between those two, like, was real.
Total greatness. And you say, because, again, I agree with you. I'm always been a total Bret Hart guy. But, you know, I actually like Owen a little better.
You know, I was never an Owen guy, but I wonder if he didn't pass away as early as he did, as if it, when I, as I grew, if I wouldn't become a fan. Because, I mean, no doubt that he's not an amazing wrestler.
Well, here's the reason, and it should come as no surprise. It's just that he was a better heel.
He really, yeah.
Owen was a little asshole. He was a little jerk.
And
he was
definitely a different kind of heel.
I absolutely loved him for it. You know?
Well, he was the little brother that was pissed off at the bigger brother.
Yes, absolutely. And so that, you know, so I rooted for Brett, for Owen. You know, I didn't root for Brett. I love Brett, and then later Brett did prove me that he could be a better heel than I thought he could be when he did his heel run in the Attitude Era, or beginning of the Attitude Era with the Hart Foundation stuff. Because even during the Hart Foundation days, early Hart Foundation, he wasn't really all that heelish. I mean, he was a heel team. And, of course, Jimmy, you know, got the heat because of running his mouth. And then Jim was kind of a nasty kind of guy. But Brett was just still a technical wrestler and just was just good. You know, he just booed against him because of who he was wrestling against. It wasn't until he did actually the stuff in the 90s that you saw that Brett can actually do heel work. And I was very, very happy with it. I thought he did a great job.
Yeah, that WrestleMania, you also had Razor and Shawn. In the classic ladder match.
Yes.
I mean, you know, so Jonathan, does that? I mean, I'm sure your memories of the Shawn and Razor match are probably a little bit like mine. You have any other thoughts on it?
No, not really. That I've seen that match numerous times since then, and it's a great match, but I don't remember it. Having a profound impact on me at the time, for some reason.
I just know I had never seen a ladder match before that. I don't, you know, or any kind. I didn't watch WCW or NWA or any incarnation, so I didn't get a lot of the hardcore matches because WWF at the time did not do them.
Right.
That's the truth. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well. To back up a little bit, when you mentioned WrestleMania 6 earlier, you said that there was a string there during WrestleMania 6 that are typically not people's favorites. But oddly, that's my favorite era of wrestling, and those WrestleManias are some of my favorite WrestleMania memories for sure. Partially because I also watched WCW, but this was pre-Monday Night War time. But, you know, when Ric Flair appeared in WWF, that was a huge shock. And then when Sid Justice or Sid Vicious, Sid Justice, Psycho Sid, whatever you want to call him, you know, it was the same thing. I was like, wait, these guys are from the other thing, you know, and it was I thought it was a big deal. And the whole, you know, WrestleMania, I think you were just talking about, have we talked about 8? Yeah, you talked about 8 a little bit.
Well, yeah, we ran through a little bit of the 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Yeah. Here. Well, you know, 6 we talked about. 7 was, I loved the Sergeant Slaughter turning his back on his country and the Iron Sheik becoming, changing his name and that whole playing with what was going on in the real world stuff. I don't know, maybe it just struck me.
Did y'all guys know the tugboat was supposed to be the original traitor?
I didn't know that, but
yes.
that wouldn't have been as impactful as
yes, people. No, of course not. But speaking of tugboat, which you in our interview earlier, yes, the original plan was to have tugboat turn on to Hogan and side with the Iranians and all this, that, and the other. But I guess they had their second thoughts about that, and then that's when they realized it. Sarge was available, you know, apparently, I guess, contract was up at AWA or whatever, and so Vince, you know, came to him with the idea, and Sarge jumped for it because he actually preferred working the heel and hadn't done it in years, so.
Well, I was a big, I was a bigger Sergeant Slaughter fan because of him being in G.I. Joe.
Well, there's a lot of people were. I mean, that was the whole reason he left WWE, because, I mean, there's still a question that there may be an argument for a couple other guys, that were right underneath Hogan and Bob Valerity or right up to Hogan and Bob Valerity. One of them was Sergeant Slaughter. Sergeant Slaughter was way over. And the G.I. Joe thing was certainly helping. And the reason he left was because Vince wanted a part of that G.I. Joe money. And so he said, no way. So it's kind of interesting because that's why Hogan left AWA was because, Vern wanting his money from Japan and whatever. So kind of crazy, these promoters. But going real quick back to the ladder match, I'm older than you, but I had never seen a ladder match before that WrestleMania because it was actually not a match that was done down south. It actually was created in Stampede, so that's why Brett was the one that suggested it because he had been in one earlier against Bad News Allen, but the first one apparently was in 1972 in Stampede. And then World of Sport had one in 87, which actually our Scottish guy, member of our board, put up a video of that between Kendo and Nagasaki and Clive Myers. It was a disco challenge ladder match, which is really good. You ought to watch it. It's right there on the Facebook page, so on and so forth. But real quick, because you talked about your favorite that most people don't like, my favorite that people usually tend to look down on is WrestleMania 4, and that's because I'm a sucker for tournaments. I love wrestling tournaments, I just love that freaking world title tournament, and when it come down to Ted and either Ted or Randy winning, I was hog heaven. I would have been happy with either choice.
Yeah.
As long as it wasn't Hogan, as long as it wasn't, whatever, I was happy with either one of those choices because I was a big fan of both. But as a matter of fact, Ted was supposed to have won, originally. Ted was supposed to have won it. The reason that Randy won it was because Honky Tonk Man refused to lose to Randy. The IC title back to Randy. So they had to do something with Randy. So they decided, we'll move it on up and we'll have to be the champ. Apparently there was a little bit of heat between Ted and Honky Tonk for a few years because of that, because it was a done deal. And that's the reason why the $1 million belt was created, was because instead of him becoming the world title, a champion, they just put this other title on him. So.
Which I love the $1 million.
I do too. I think it worked out better because it kind of lifts because Ted's usually considered the greatest, if not the greatest wrestler to have never won the world title, but him being the $1 million champion kind of puts him above it in a way in his own kind of character way, that he didn't need their paltry championship. He had his own. So yeah, I always did like that a lot better.
We obviously can't go through every WrestleMania. There's only
33 of them.
I know. But, it's hard not to mention the WrestleMania 17.
Oh, yes.
Which is Stone Cold and Rock, which is a classic feud. Stone Cold won the belt off of the Rock. And then you have the Hardys, Dudleys, and Edge and Christian. Wasn't the first TLC match.
No, it wasn't. It
was the second one, they're both fantastic matches.
Yes.
But I think I usually lean towards the first one.
I do too. I think most people do.
It
wasn't a situation where the second one totally didn't live up to the first one, but it still wasn't just quite as great as that first one. And that's probably just because, by the second time, it was like, okay, we have seen this before, though. We didn't see anything to that level. So it was this whole total crazy balls of wall nuts thing, and then by the time we got around, it was a little bit more inured to it, and still crazy, but not whatever. But yeah, that was a great card all the way up and down. I think that was probably the best match Triple H ever had up to that point at WrestleMania with Undertaker. Yeah, I think that was a great match between those two.
You also had the Vince and Shane Street fight in that.
Yes, Vince and Shane Street,
and match. That was the first Mania after the WCW purchase. So kind of.
Yes.
True. I don't know what that had to do with anything, but
it's information.
But a little bit of trivia.
And of course, 25 and 24 were well regarded by a lot of people, if nothing else, because of the Shawn Michaels and Undertaker matches and both.
Well, for so long you had such great matches with Shawn and Undertaker and Ric Flair and Shawn and
Triple H
and Undertaker. Yes. I mean, we really got spoiled. I mean, we really did.
We really did. Yes, we did. And then, you know, even though the matches weren't as good as those, the story of Daniel's advent, which we mentioned in the interview earlier, was one of the most feel-good moments in WrestleMania history. You know,
that I mean, because even
as good as because I mean, unfortunately, the Michaels and Undertakers neither one of them was the last match.
Yeah,
and then both of them were kind of. Well, certainly the retirement one was kind of bittersweet, and the Ric Flair retirement one was kind of bittersweet. I mean, beautiful, but bittersweet.
The
whole thing with Daniel was just greatness. You know?
Yeah, the Ric Flair Shawn Michaels match is just a beautiful match. In all, yeah. I mean, we all knew Flair was his retirement match, but. To know the ending and then to still be not surprised by it, but moved. I mean, like the way Shawn did it, you know, with the, you know, the whole
probably
I love,
on
I'm
a,
sorry,
probably
I love on, you.
Probably, yes, exactly.
And not just that, but after he pins Rick, he immediately lays down and talks to him. So
yeah,
you know,
hold his head.
It just the whole
Rick's
thing.
Crying.
Oh
yeah.
Gosh,
I do believe on a personal level that's probably my favorite WrestleMania match of all time. Easy.
I mean, it's hard to argue with that.
And just the whole relationship of those two and the way that it was perfect. It was absolutely perfect. The only thing that mars it is Rick going back to TNA. Coming back and going to TNA, but I understand these reasons why, and I don't hold it against him. But man, just how much more special it would have been if Rick had never wrestled again ever. You know.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I don't think it tarnishes it too bad. Just cause. I mean,
No. I don't think. No, it's still there. I'm just saying that it's just a little. But you know, Rick had to have money. You know, the man was in a bad place at the time.
But Shawn, I mean, I'm a big Shawn Michaels fan too, and it's hard to be a Bret fan and a Shawn Michaels fan, really, at the same time.
Well, again, I kind of sided with one particular one. But
was it Bret?
No, I didn't side with Bret because he was the goody two shoes. That's what it was Shawn. Until then, I did side with Bret and the Hart Foundation against DX, though. I did.
Yeah.
So I was on Bret's side on that one.
Yeah. John, does any other moments stick out to you?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot. You're the only one of us that hasn't been to a live WrestleMania, correct?
Yeah.
Richard?
Yeah.
No, he just told you that he was kind of.
Well, I mean, yes, I was. I was live at closed circuit television. No, so
to throw him under the bus. Yeah, you really haven't been to a live when you loser.
I was going to ask. You know, I was making sure that I was correct. That's all. I wasn't making fun of you.
No. It's. I mean, so I kind of make fun of myself because why I didn't go when it was in Atlanta, and I didn't know you at the time or any. I didn't really have any friends in Atlanta, the ones I have now, or I probably would have gone. But why I didn't go when it was in Atlanta, I still don't know the. I mean, because I had money to go. I mean, I could have gone at the time, but I don't know why I didn't.
Were you out of wrestling at that time?
No. In fact, at that time, I was throwing some of the best WrestleMania parties.
Well, then you have absolutely no excuse.
But I honestly like throwing the parties more than anything.
That's probably what it was.
I even had prize walls. Who has a prize wall? Yeah, I don't think there's a video of it, but I had a prize wall where, you know, we guessed the matches and stuff.
Right.
And whoever won... If it was a tie, we had a tiebreaker thing. But whoever won, you remember the game on Price is Right, like the Punch Out?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I built a cardboard wall of that, and you punched through it, and you grabbed your prize. That's what is special about WrestleMania, I feel, is like, yeah, just even if you're not there, it's still something cool, and it's still something to get excited about. Right. I mean, even though I don't know that many wrestling fans now, I'm still, this WrestleMania, I've got two of my friends coming over, and we're going to watch it, and it'll be great.
You know, I think you touched on something real quick there when you said we got kind of spoiled by a series of WrestleManias there. And I think that's definitely true because, you know, everybody keeps expecting WrestleMania to be something that really has never been. WrestleMania has always been the big spectacle, you know, celebrities involved, the big heavyweights and the big, you know, not necessarily the best technical wrestlers. It's always been more that than it has been like the great matchups or whatever, and it seems like everybody keeps expecting that, and so they get upset about things like, you know, Shane and AJ instead of AJ, and you know Sammy or you know the Goldberg and Lesnar and so on and so forth, and that's WrestleMania. There's other shows that are more for us hardcore fans. This is for all of the casual fans and all of the, you know, national type of thing. And so
I mean,
so
it is the Super Bowl. I mean, it's the Super Bowl.
And it's
Bowl.
Bigger
I mean,
than it ever has been. I mean, look at the coverage they're getting from ESPN.
Yeah. Oh, especially now that Coach is on there.
Yes. Well, I mean, yeah, but I mean, you know, Triple H is on there on both First Take and SportsCenter. You know,
yeah.
So that's big stuff, man. I mean, that doesn't happen for years. And it didn't ever happen for years. So, you know, I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, there's certainly matches that I would prefer. But, you know, I know AJ Styles and I know Shane McMahon. And while I prefer a different matchup, I don't think I'm going to come away totally disappointed. It's going to be a WrestleMania spectacle. And AJ's going to look like $1 million as always. And Shane's going to do something really stupid.
I did not like the Shane and Undertaker match from last year, so we can hope it's better.
I did not like the match, and I think I don't want to blame it on Undertaker because I don't think there's a blame thing, but I just think that Undertaker's got to the point where he isn't what he used to be.
He can't carry a match,
and he had a non-wrestler in there in Shane, and
yeah,
it just didn't work. And it was,
I mean,
just
he can still body. Wrestle. He can still wrestle.
Oh, he can still wrestle. Sure.
Especially if you watch Shawn. I mean, Shawn and Undertaker's match was equally as touching as...
Yeah, but that was years ago, though.
It was. It was, what, 6 years ago?
Yeah, but that's a big difference. He's an old man.
Yeah, but he wrestles once a year. He can do it.
I think the Brock Lesnar thing took a lot out of him.
Oh, Lord. So...
But no, I was just saying, though, is that Shane... Shane now has a dance partner that can carry it.
Yes.
Yeah, and I just have to believe it'll be better. And while I didn't like the match overall, the moment coming off the cage is an iconic moment. It was crazy.
I hope Shane's kids don't show up, or they turn on him if they do. I just hated that moment.
Get that older kid, the oldest kid, the nutty right there, you know, and then they all tear off the shirts and they got AJ shirts on, their Bullet Club shirts on.
How amazing would that be?
That would be amazing.
I
think that one of the better matches, because everybody's talking about, and this is the kind of thing that sneaks up on you, because everybody talks about the whole storyline, whether they like it or don't like it, with Bray and Randy, but really those are two great workers. That's a great match that between two workers.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that match is probably going to be pretty damn good, considering two participants.
Except if Orton wins.
Well, no. The outcome has to be Bray.
Do you think that's going to happen?
I do believe it's going to happen.
I think it's going to happen.
I do. I think this whole anointment... is that the right word? This whole John putting Bray over the way he did twice, I think is a sign that they're finally pulling the trigger on this guy.
Yeah,
and Randy isn't a guy that will buck on that. You know,
not
the only
to
way
a guy like Bray, I don't
no,
think
Randy will have no problem putting Bray over. I'm Bray over. I have no problem. I don't have any doubt of that. And I think this is what this whole thing is supposed to do. I think he's already beat John Cena twice, and he's going to go to WrestleMania, and he's going to go over Brandon. I believe that. I truly do.
So in many ways, we are kind of skipping over WrestleMania.
I just about to say that.
WrestleMania 23. Was it 23?
Oh, it's 33.
No. I was going on a different route as far as the Donald Trump. So it's hard not to mention that Donald Trump was involved in WrestleMania, considering he's now the president.
Didn't he do something pretty big this past year?
Yeah, I know.
Aren't we going to be doing a whole show on that soon?
And that's what I was going to say. So before anybody did mention that we didn't mention Donald Trump, you know, because it is big, whether you like it or not, or well, whatever.
And also because he had a lot more to do with the WrestleMania. I mean, because he was 4 and 5, both were Trump prizes. So.
Sure. Well, I mean, and he was on TV. He was on TV for a month, I think. But anyway, like Jonathan was kind of saying, we're going to do a whole show. We're going to do a pay-per-view show, and that's going to be the one we watch just because a lot of iconic things happened at that one. So... But I do think it's appropriate to mention Brock and Goldberg because they have already fought at WrestleMania.
Yes, they did.
And it was terrible.
Stone Cold as the referee.
And, I mean, that the crowd took over.
Oh, God, yes.
I mean, if you want... you can find a couple of things on YouTube, and I don't know if they've edited it out on the WWE Network or anything, but that crowd... is ruthless. Because I think Goldberg and Brock were both leaving, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes, they were. Yes.
So, and it got out. And but besides that, it's a terrible match.
Awful.
I mean, there's so much lag between the two. And awful. I'm not 100% sure that this WrestleMania is going to be much better. I mean, the matches that they've had have been terrible.
We have not seen any indication that Goldberg can work.
He can't.
And Brock is unwilling to work beyond, you know, freaking Suplex City. So I don't know how they're going to book this match. I don't know how it's going to go. I don't know how it's going to go.
I'm not a fan of Goldberg coming back. I'm just not. It's like Batista. It's not exactly like the Batista coming back thing, but it's actually worse, the Goldberg is.
And there's no... Money in the bank to be cashed in right now, right?
No, nobody has one. Yeah, nobody has one.
No.
So yeah, I mean, we're gonna probably have Brock as champion. I would say. I mean, if they bury Brock again, he's not re-signing.
Well, there's no way they're doing it a third time. There's no way.
Well, unless Brock doesn't re-sign.
I mean, well, that's true. Know, if it is a way to know, Brock up, but see, but I don't think that's the case because they've already sort of there's this big thing out there that Meltzer and them have worked on that they're already planning on Roman and Brock for next WrestleMania. So if that's the case.
I mean, do you think that this match is going to go more than 5 minutes?
No,
unless it's just them.
Unless there's a bunch of schmoz. I mean, unless they're
well, in the last match went I think about 10 or 15 minutes, but. Yeah. About 8 minutes of that is them just walking around the ring.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, and they won't get away with it.
I mean, I do believe there'll probably be some kind of schmoz. In what capacity and who will be involved, I don't know. I do know that Kevin sort of threatened to involve himself in the match last Monday. So I don't know what they'll pay off on that, if he was just, making noise, being able to eat, but... You know, but he did say something very specifically about how he would, mess with that match in some way or something. But I don't know. So I don't know. It's that's probably the biggest question mark of the entire show because I just don't know. I don't know how they're going to book that.
These are not memories.
That's true.
I mean, the only reason I brought it up was because
we're remembering back when they
wrestled. Yeah, the Goldberg and Brock.
Oh, right,
it's
right.
A very
right.
Satisfying ending of Stone Cold stunning the shit out of both of them. So.
Well, and that's just it. I love Stone Cold.
Me too.
I mean, but yeah, that. Yeah, who knows?
Well, the reason I was asking if you had not been to a live event was because I was going to ask for those.
Oh, he's rubbing it in again. Okay.
Well, no, I wanted to find out. I've been to two, so yes. How did that? You've been to one, right, John?
Yes, I went last year.
How did that? I remember talking about this, you know, after WrestleMania last year, I guess, your live experience. But how would you say that affected your memory of the event overall?
There's no question that if I had seen it on pay-per-view, I probably would not have liked it as much. Because after the fact, and even the drive back, me and the guy I went with, Ray, who's been on the show before, reviewing the show, we were tearing it apart and saying what we didn't like and what didn't work and this, that, and the other. And then later, you know, on the podcast and then, you know, on the chat boards and on the Facebook, this, that, and the other. Again, you know, couldn't argue that this was wrong and that was wrong and so on and so forth. But that experience, that actually being there and seeing it live and watching it, it was a great experience. So I did enjoy it way more than I think I probably would have just watching on television. No question.
Yeah. Well, I would say the same thing. And actually, so I went to 27 here in Atlanta and then 28 in Miami. And I don't think either one of them was overall a bad experience or, you know, whatever, bad WrestleMania. But they also weren't the best ones. But as much as I anticipated getting to go to WrestleMania in Atlanta, because this is where I'm from, where I grew up, it's the first time I'd ever came here, I think I enjoyed it more being out of town, because it felt more like, you know, it was more of a special event because I was there. And
yes,
you know, even though I got to experience some cool stuff here, because I got to go to all the Hall of Fame, the Raw the next night, all of the fan access things. I got to sit in the press box, which actually wasn't the best place to sit. But you know, still I got special treatment because I was with the press. So obviously that made it more memorable. Sure. But I you know, same thing. Not that it was a bad show. I thought the John Cena match with The Miz was actually a really good match when the Miz came out the champion. His part in that whole thing with John Cena and The Rock, it was great, I thought.
I agree.
Yeah, totally agree. No doubt.
And the Rey Mysterio-Cody Rhodes match was good.
Yes.
And what was the next year in Miami? I mean, both of those had some good matches, you know. But being there live definitely makes it a more memorable experience.
Well, yeah, we kind of were talking about that earlier in the interview when we were talking about how the live experience is completely different than watching on television, you know. And then even, like I said, that even watching live television is not the same as watching fake television. But yeah, being there and actually experiencing it is a whole other ball of wax. And I tell you, I mean, just being there and seeing, you know, when Stone Cold and John and Mankind came out, you know, Mick came out. And, I mean, I'm telling you right here and now, don't let anybody get it twisted. The biggest pop of the night was when Stone Cold's glass hit. Period.
Oh, I mean, that doesn't surprise me at all. That's one of the
My ears were ringing. It was just, it ripped the roof off, man.
That's just one of the most iconic things ever, just that glass shattering. It is. Amazing.
And because they had kept it under wraps, you know, no one expected Stone Cold to be there. No one expected Mick or Shawn to be there. But certainly didn't expect Stone Cold to be there, because he played really coy about it. And then when they came out, it was a big surprise. And I was funny, because I thought that the Shawn's pop was pretty big, and then all of a sudden the glass hit and it was all over with. And, you know, Rock got a big pop too, but it was not bigger than that.
I know we already mentioned Rick and Sean, but yes, that was WrestleMania 24, which I didn't realize it was that long ago. But I love that WrestleMania. That's one of my favorites, because that had the Money Mayweather and Big Show feud, which we have talked about on the Celebrity Show, but I really do think that was a great feud.
It was.
I mean, that's what WrestleMania... I mean, I think that's what WrestleMania is missing now.
That is one of those things. More than missing, it's just good storylines, and even with outside people. Because, you know, I always thought that the LT and Bigelow match was good.
I love that.
Yeah. But the deal is that the WWE, the biggest problem that they've got, and we've kind of touched on this before, is that they're not... They've lost the ability or the desire or both of playing it by ear as much as they used to, because anybody that looks back on that, they'll remember that the whole thing started out with the show being the heel and Mayweather being the good guy. But once they realized that the fans were siding with the Big Show, they switched it around. And they had Mayfair come off as the heel.
And he was a great heel.
And he was a
very
great heel.
Easy to hate, yes. And you could tell he loved it.
Well, yeah, because that's the way they should have booked it to begin with. Because, yep. Because he is kind of a colorful, heelish type of guy. And two, he was an outsider, you know. It wasn't
the
same thing.
It wasn't
the same thing as LT, because that was in New York, you know. And he was the biggest giant, one of the greatest giants of all time. So there in New York, he was going to get cheered. And there was still booze because he was still an outsider, you know. Bam Bam Bigelow was our boy. So I certainly wouldn't have Bam Bam, but you're absolutely right. I mean, and that's a definitely great one. There's no question of that.
And I just remember the very last match, like the referees were knocked out, so they had to have a new referee, and somebody was being. I can't remember what the final match was actually was, but. So the referee had to run from backstage all the way to the ring, and they were in the Citrus Bowl. So it was so long that it's just hilarious to watch. I think it was Little Nate that ran down, and he's just like booking it the whole way. And like, I mean, he was probably exhausted by the time he got down there.
Poor Little Nate.
But we're kind of running out of time. So any last words?
WrestleMania 22 is the Edge versus Mick Foley match. Sheer greatness. I do believe, and Edge himself has said, that match sort of put him over the top and totally solidified him as a top guy.
In Chicago?
Yes. Where he went through the flaming table.
Yeah.
Edge has said actually on the other side of it, that Mick has thanked Edge because that finally gave Mick his WrestleMania moment, which he had not had, weirdly had never got.
He has a Hell in a Cell moment. You don't need everything.
Yes, but everybody talks about WrestleMania moments. He didn't have one. But Edge, that was one both Edge and him. Edge had a moment before that, of course, obviously with 17, but Edge said that's what put him over the top. He thought that what's really coronated him, and he was able to go on and become one of the top guys or the top guy at SmackDown. So, that's a really good one as well. So yes, okay.
Jonathan, you got anything?
I was going to mention 22. It's one of the better ones of the. Well, I guess that's not even a recent one anymore.
It is crazy to think that it was 11 years ago. I mean, 12 years ago.
11 freaking years. 12 years ago.
I just thought that overall that one was really good. And the Chicago crowd really added a lot to that, especially the next night on Raw, because that was when Cena, submitted Triple H. And that was probably the beginning of the hating John Cena thing,
Well, that's the thing, because I was watching What Culture's, top 10 list, and I recommended both of you, where Adam Bonfield reads off these 10 things you may not have known, or these great things about each WrestleMania, and they're counting them down until the next week. And on that one, they did say that it was a great one, because it really was, like I said, it was the advent of Edge, was also the advent of John Cena. So that really set the tone for the next 10 some odd years for wrestling.
Yeah. And that Undertaker Mark Henry match was surprisingly good.
Yeah.
But you can say that about a lot of Undertaker's matches, especially at WrestleMania. Like if you watch the DVD of all of his WrestleMania matches or the streak, and you're like, yeah, I don't know. For me, I forgot some of these matches, you know, and I'm like, oh, Kevin Nash and Undertaker, that's not going to be good, but it was great.
Yeah.
And he and Mark Henry had a really good match.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they did.
All right. So I have to go to work.
33 years is too much. You can't cover it all.
Well, no. When this wasn't really meant to cover everything. Oh. It was just kind of a, you know, WrestleMania is. It's one of the biggest things, so we like to celebrate it as well here on the show. So, you know, this year certainly looks better to me than last year as of right now, so I'm pretty excited about it.
I think it's a pretty good card this year. A lot of people are not saying that, but
no, I think because it's set up pretty good right now.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, there's a lot of matches that I look forward to. I think it'll be fine. And I do. And right now, my pick for sleeper or sealer is probably Aries and Neville. I think that's going to be a fantastic match.
Will it be on the actual show?
I sure as hell hope so. Don't do that, folks. You do your best damn work.
I'm saying it right now. I'm not watching WrestleMania until 7 o'clock. I don't care what time it starts. I can't do a 7, 8-hour show. I'll be miserable.
Try that. Try that trapped on the freaking upper tier.
No, I can't. I can't. So 7 o'clock is when we're starting to watch it, and I probably won't start paying attention until 8.
Well, I probably will be because I'm going to a friend's house. We're actually having a little get-together for this time over at his house. And so I'll have a bathroom nearby, so I'll probably.
All right, well. Jonathan, all right.
Bone says
you.
This is over with. He's calling it quits.
Jonathan can be reached at wrestlingwithpopculture.com. And you can check us out at our new Patreon account.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot to mention that.
Well, that's all right. No, you mentioned it in the introduction, remember?
Oh, yeah, right. That introduction.
So that's patreon.com/theprowrestlingroundtable. And we'll talk more about that either next episode or after WrestleMania.
Yes.
Yes. But definitely check it out. The rewards are there. You'll get a lot of bonus content. There's already some content on there. So check it out. Support us if you want to.
Good night, Irene. By the way, Bones' first WrestleMania was 30.
Was 30? Did he have his little Daniel Bryan t-shirt on and going, yes.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.